Holston hadn't moved the entire time. Even as she fell on the side of the hill, clutching her helmet, writhing, while the toxins first ate away the spray-on linings, then the suit, and finally his wife. He hadn't moved.
"Other foot?"
Nelson slapped his ankle. Holston lifted his foot and allowed the tech to bunch the rest of the suit around his shins. Looking at his hands, at the black carbon undersuit he wore against his skin, Holston pictured it all dissolving off his body, sloughing away like flakes of dried grease from a generator's pipe while the blood burst from his pores and pooled up in his lifeless suit.
"If you'll grab the bar and stand..."
Nelson was walking him through a routine he'd seen twice before. Once with Jack Brent, who had been belligerent and hostile right up to the end, forcing him as sheriff to stand guard by the bench. And once with his wife, whom he had watched get ready through the airlock's small porthole. Holston knew what to do from watching these others, but he still needed to be told. His thoughts were elsewhere. Reaching up, he grabbed the trapeze-like bar hanging above him and pulled himself upright. Nelson grabbed the sides of the suit and yanked them up to Holston's waist. Two empty arms flapped to either side.
"Left hand here?"
Holston numbly obeyed. It was surreal to be on the other side of this mechanical death walk of the condemned. Holston often wondered why people complied, why they just went along. Even Jack Brent had done what he was told, as foul-mouthed and verbally abusive as he'd been. Allison had done it quiet, just like this, Holston thought, as he inserted one hand and then the other. The suit came up, and Holston thought maybe that people went along because they couldn't believe it was happening. None of it was real enough to rebel against. The animal part of his mind wasn't made for this, to be calmly ushered to a death it was perfectly aware of.
"Turn,"
he did. There was a tug at the small of his back, and then a noisy zipping sound up to his neck. Another tug, another zip. Two layers of futility. The crunch of industrial Velcro over the top, pats and double checks. Holston heard the hollow helmet slide off its shelf. He flexed his fingers inside the puffy gloves while Nelson checked over the dome's innards.
"Let's go over the procedure one more time."
"It's not necessary," Holston said quietly. Nelson glanced toward the airlock door leading back to the silo. Holston didn't need to look to know someone was likely watching.
"Bear with me," Nelson said. "I have to do it by the book."
Holston nodded, but he knew there wasn't any book. Of all the mystic oral traditions passed through silo generations, none matched the cult-like intensity of the suitmakers and the cleaning techs. Everyone gave them their space. The band might do the physical cleaning, but these were the people who made it possible. These were the men and women who maintained the view to that wider world beyond the silo's stifling confines. Nelson placed the helmet on the bench.
"You got your scrubbers here?"
He patted the wool pad stuck to the front of the suit. Holston pulled one off with a ripping sound, studied the whorls and curls of the rough material, then stuck it back on.
"Two squirts from the cleaning bottle before you scrub with the wool, then dry with this towel, then put the ablating films on last."
He patted the pockets in order, even though they were clearly labeled and numbered, upside down so Holston could read them, and color-coded. Holston nodded and met the tech's eyes for the first time. He was surprised to see fear there, fear he had learned well to notice in this profession. He almost asked Nelson what was wrong before it occurred to him. The man was worried all these instructions were for naught, that Holston would walk out, like everyone in the silo feared all prisoners would, and not do his duty. Not clean up for the people whose rules had killed him. Or was Nelson worried that the expensive and laborious gear he and his colleagues had built, using those secrets and techniques handed down from well before the uprising, would go away and rot to no purpose?
"You okay?" Nelson asked. "Anything too tight?"
Holston glanced around the airlock. "My life is too tight," he wanted to say. "My skin is too tight. The walls are too tight." He just shook his head. "I'm ready," he whispered. It was the truth. Holston was oddly and truly very much ready to go. And he remembered suddenly how ready his wife had been as well. 5. 3 years earlier.
"I want to go out. I 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 want to go out."
Holston arrived at the cafeteria in a sprint. His radio was still squawking. Deputy Marnes yelling something about Allison. Holston hadn't even taken the time to respond. He had just bolted up 3 flights of stairs toward the scene. "What's going on?" he asked. He swam through the crowd by the door and found his wife writhing on the cafeteria floor, held down by Connor and 2 other food staff employees. "Let her go!" He slapped their hands off his wife's shins and nearly got one of her boots to his chin. "Settle down," he said. He reached for her wrists, which were twisting this way and that, to get out of the desperate grips of grown men. "Baby, what the hell is going on?" "She was running for the airlock," Connor said through grunts of exertion. Percy corralled her kicking feet, and Holston didn't stop him. He saw now why 3 men were needed. He leaned close to Allison, making sure she saw him. Her eyes were wild, peeking through a curtain of disheveled hair. "Allison, baby, baby, you've got to settle down. I want to go out, I want to go out, I want to go out." Her voice had quieted, but the words kept tumbling out.
"Don't say that," Holston told her.
Chills ran through his body at the sound of the grave utterances. He held her cheeks. "Baby, baby, don't say that." But some part of him knew, in a jolting flash, what it meant. He knew it was too late. The others had heard. Everyone had heard. His wife had signed her death certificate, and right before him. The room spun around Holston as he begged Allison to be quiet. It was like he had arrived at the scene of some horrible accident, some mishap in the machine shop, to find a person he loved wounded. Arrived to find them alive and kicking, but knowing at a glance that the injury was a mortal one. Holston felt warm tears streak down his cheeks as he tried to wipe the hair from her face. Her eyes finally met his, stopped their fevered swirling and locked onto his with awareness. And for a moment, just a second, before he could wonder if she'd been drugged or abused in any way, a spark of calm clarity registered there. A flash of sanity, of cool calculation. And then it was blinked away, and her eyes went wild again, and she begged to be let out over and over. "Lift her up," Holston said. His husband's eyes swam behind tears while he allowed his dutiful sheriff self to intervene. There was nothing for it but to lock her up, even as he wanted nothing else but room enough to scream. "That way," he told Connor, who had both hands under her twisting shoulders. He nodded toward his office and the holding cell beyond. Just past that, down at the end of the hall, the bright yellow paint on the great airlock door stood out, serene and menacing, silent and waiting. Once in the holding cell, Allison immediately calmed. She sat on the bench, no longer struggling or blabbering, as if she'd only stopped in to rest and enjoy the view. Holston was now the writhing wreck. He paced outside the bars and asked unanswered questions while Deputy Marnes and the mayor handled his procedural work. The two of them are treating Holston and his wife both like patients. And even as Holston's mind spun with the horror of the past half hour, in the back of his sheriff brain, where he was always alert for the rising tensions in the silo, that part of him was dimly aware of the shock and rumors trembling through walls of concrete and rebar. The enormous, pent-up pressure of the place was now hissing through the seams in whispers.
"Sweetheart, you've got to talk to me," he pleaded again and again.
He stopped his pacing and twisted the bars in his hands. Allison kept her back to him. She gazed at the wall screen, at the brown hills and gray sky and dark clouds. Now and then a hand came up to brush hair out of her face, but otherwise she didn't move or speak. Only when Holston's key had gone into the lock, not long after they had wrestled her in and shut the door, did she utter a single, "Don't," that had convinced him to remove it. While he pleaded and she ignored, the machinations of the looming cleaning gyred through the silo. Tex rumbled down the hallway as a suit was sized and readied. Cleaning tools were prepped in the airlock. A canister hissed somewhere as argon was loaded into the flushing chambers. The commotion of it sporadically rumbled past the holding cell where Holston stood, gazing at his wife. Chattering Tex went dreadfully silent as they squeezed past. They didn't even seem to breathe in his presence. Hours went by, and Allison refused to talk, a behavior that created its own stir in the silo. Holston spent the entire day blubbering through the bars, his brain on fire with confusion and agony. It had happened in a single moment, the destruction of all that he knew. He tried to wrap his brain around it while Allison sat in the cell, gazing out at the dismal land, seemingly pleased with her far worse status as someone doomed. It was after dark when she finally spoke, after her last meal had been silently refused for the final time, after the Tex had finished in the airlock, closing the yellow door and retiring for a sleepless night. It was after his deputy had gone for the night, patting Holston on the shoulder twice. What felt like many hours after that, when Holston was near to passing out in fatigue from his crying and hoarse remonstrations, long after the hazy sun had settled over the hills visible from the cafeteria and lounge, the hills that hid the rest of that distant, crumbling city. In the near dark, left in the holding cell, Allison whispered something, almost inaudible.
"It's not real."
That's what Holston thought he heard. He stared. "Baby?" He gripped the bars and pulled himself up to his knees.
"Honey,"
he whispered, wiping the crust from his cheeks. She turned. It was like the sun changing its mind and rising back over the hills. To acknowledge him gave him hope. It choked him up, causing him to think this had all been a sickness, a fever, something they could have Doc write up to excuse her for everything she'd uttered. She'd never meant it. She was saved just by snapping out of it, and Holston was saved just by seeing her turn to him.
"Nothing you see is real,"
she said quietly. She seemed calm of body even as her craziness continued, condemning her with forbidden words.
"Come, talk to me,"
Holston said. He waved her to the bars. Allison shook her head. She patted the cot's thin mattress beside her. Holston checked the time. It was long past visiting hours. He could be sent to cleaning just for doing what he was about to do. The key went into the lock without hesitation. A metallic click rang out, impossibly loud. Holston stepped inside with his wife and sat beside her. It killed him not to touch her, to not wrap her up or drag her out to some safe place, back to their bed where they could pretend it had all been a bad dream. But he didn't dare move. He sat and twisted his hands together while she whispered.
It doesn't have to be real. Any of this. None of this.
She looked to the screen. Holston leaned so he could smell the dried sweat from the day's struggle. Baby, what's going on? Her hair stirred with his words. She reached out and rubbed the darkening display, feeling the pixels.
It could be morning right now, and we would never know. There could be people outside.
She turned and looked at him.
They could be watching us,
she said with a sinister grin. Holston held her gaze. She didn't seem crazy at all, not like earlier. Her words were crazy, but she didn't seem to be. Where did you get that idea? He asked. He thought he knew, but he asked anyway. Did you find something on the hard drives? He'd heard that she had run straight from her lab toward the airlock, already barking her madness. Something had happened while she was at work. What did you find?
There's more deleted than just from the uprising, she whispered. Of course there would be. Everything is deleted. All the recent stuff, too.
She laughed. Her voice got suddenly loud and her eyes lost focus.
Emails you never sent me, I bet.
Honey. Holston dared to reach for her hands, and she didn't pull away. He held them. What did you find? Was it an email? Who was it from? She shook her head.
No, I found the programs they use, the ones that make pictures on the screens that look so real.
She looked back to the quickening desk.
I.T.,
she said.
I.T. They're the ones. They know. It's a secret that only they know.
She shook her head. What secret? Holston couldn't tell if this was nonsense or important. He only knew that she was talking.
But now I know. And you will, too. I'll come back for you, I swear. This will be different. We'll break the cycle, you and me. I'll come back and we'll go over that hill together.
She laughed.
If it's there,
she said loudly.
If that hill is there and it's green, we'll go over it together.
She turned to him.
There is no uprising. Not really. There's just a gradual leak. Just the people who know, who want out. She smiled. They get to go out,
she said.
They get just what they ask for. I know why they clean. Why they say they won't, but why they do. I know. I know. And they never come back. They wait and wait and wait, but I won't. I'll come right back. This'll be different.
Holston squeezed her hands. Tears were dripping off his cheeks.
Baby, why are you doing this?
He felt like she wanted to explain herself now that the silo was dark and they were all alone.
I know about the uprisings,
she said. Holston nodded.
I know. You told me. There were others.
No.
Allison pulled away from him, but it was only to make space so she could look him in the eyes. Hers were no longer wild, as before.
Holston, I know why the uprisings took place. I know why.
Allison bit her lower lip. Holston waited, his body tense.
It was always over the doubt, the suspicion that things weren't as bad out there as they seemed. You felt that, right? That we could be anywhere, living a lie?
Holston knew better than to answer, to even twitch. Broaching this subject led to cleaning. He sat frozen and waited.
It was probably the younger generations, Allison said. Every 20 years or so. They wanted to push further, to explore, I think. Don't you ever feel that urge? Didn't you when you were younger?
Her eyes lost focus.
Or maybe it was the couples, newly married, who were driven to madness when they were told they couldn't have kids in this damned limited place. Maybe they were willing to risk everything for that chance.
Her eyes focused on something far away. Perhaps she was seeing that lottery ticket they had yet to redeem and now never would. She looked back to Holston. He wondered if he could be sent to cleaning even for his silence, for not yelling her down as she uttered every one of the great forbidden words.
It could have even been the elderly residents,
she said,
cooped up too long, no longer afraid in their final years, maybe wanting to move out and make room for the others, for the few precious grandchildren. Whoever it was, whoever, every uprising took place because of this doubt, this feeling that we're in the bad place right here.
She looked around the cell.
You can't say that,
Holston whispered.
That's the great offense.
Allison nodded.
Expressing desire to leave, yes, the great offense. Don't you see why? Why is that so forbidden? Because all the uprising started with that desire, that's why.
You get what you ask for, Holston recited, those words drilled into his head since youth. His parents had warned him, their only precious child, to never want out of the silo, never even think about it. Don't let it cross your mind. It was instant death, that thought, and it would be the destruction of their one and only. He looked back to his wife. He still didn't understand her madness, this decision. So she had found deleted programs that could make worlds on computer screens look real. What did that mean? Why do this?
Why?
He asked her.
Why do it this way? Why didn't you come to me? There has to be a better way to find out what's going on. We could start by telling people what you're finding on those drives.
And be the ones who start the next great uprising.
Allison laughed. Some of the madness was still there, or maybe it was just an intense frustration and boiling anger. Perhaps a great multi-generational betrayal had pushed her to the edge.
No thanks, she said,
her laughter subsiding.
I wiped everything I found. I don't want them to know. Damn them if they stay here. I'm only coming back for you.
You don't come back from this, Holston said angrily. You think the banished are still out there? You think they choose to not come back because they feel betrayed by us?
Why do you think they do the cleaning? Allison asked. Why do they pick up their wool and set to work without hesitation?
Holston sighed. He felt the anger in him draining away. No one knows why, he said.
But why do you think?
We've talked about this, he said. How many times have we discussed this? He was sure all couples whispered their theories when they were alone. He looked past Allison as he remembered those times. He looked to the wall and saw the moon's position and read it in the night's hour. Their time was limited. His wife would be gone tomorrow. That simple thought came often like lightning from stormy clouds. Everyone has theories, he said. We've shared ours countless times. Let's just...
But now you know something new,
Allison told him. She let go of his hand and brushed the hair from her face.
You and I know something new, and... Now it all makes sense. It makes perfect sense. And tomorrow, I'll know for sure.
Allison smiled. She patted Holston's hand as if he were a child.
And one day, my love, you will know it too.
6. Present time. The first year without her, Holston had waited, buying into her insanity, hoping she'd come back.
He'd spent the first anniversary of her death scrubbing the holding cell clean, washing the yellow airlock door, straining for some sound, some knock, that the ghost of his wife was back to set him free. When it didn't happen, he began to consider the alternative, going out after her. He had spent enough days, weeks, months, going through her computer files, reading some of what she had pieced together, making sense of half of it, to become half mad himself. His world was a lie, he came to believe, and without Allison in it, he had nothing to live for, even if it were the truth. The second anniversary of her departure was his year of cowardice. He had walked to work, the poisonous words in his mouth, his desire to go out, but he had choked them down at the last second. He and Deputy Marnes had gone on patrol that day with the secret of how near he'd come to death burning inside of him. That was a long year of cowardice, of letting Allison down. The first year had been her failure. Last year had been his. But no more. Now, one long year later, he was alone in the airlock, wearing a cleaning suit, full of doubts and convictions. The silo was sealed off behind him, that thick, yellow door bolted tight, and Holston thought that this was not how he thought he'd die, or what he had hoped would become of him. He had thought he would remain in the silo forever, his nutrients going as the nutrients of his parents had, into the soil of the 8th-floor dirt farm. It seemed a lifetime ago that he had dreamed of a family, of his own child, a fantasy of twins, or another lottery win, a wife to grow old with. A klaxon sounded on the other side of the yellow doors, warning everyone but him away. He was to stay. There was nowhere else for him to go. The argon chambers hissed, pumping the room full of the inert gas. After a minute of this, Holston could feel the pressure of the air as it crinkled the cleaning suit tight around his joints. He breathed the oxygen circulating inside his helmet and stood before the other door, the forbidden door, the one to the awful outside world, and waited. There was a metal groan from pistons deep within the walls, the sacrificial plastic curtains covering the interior of the airlock wrinkled from the pressure of the built-up argon. These curtains would be incinerated inside the airlock while Holston cleaned. The area would be scrubbed clean before nightfall, ready for the next cleaning. The great metal doors before him shuddered, and then a shaft of incredible space appeared at their joint, widening as the doors withdrew into the jam. They wouldn't open all the way, not like they were once designed to. The risk of invading air had to be minimized. An argon torrent hissed through the gap, dulling to a roar as the space grew. Holston pressed close, as horrified at himself for not resisting as he'd previously been perplexed by the actions of others. Better to go out, to see the world one time with his own eyes, than to be burned alive with the plastic curtains. As soon as the opening was wide enough, Holston squeezed through, his suit catching and rubbing at the doors.